Welcome along to another edition of From the Resort Podcast, your host Tim Wilshire. Episode number 50 of the podcast today. Here I'm with Mark Harris, who's the Managing Director of Sotheby's New Zealand. Mark moved to Queenstown 20 years ago, so I'd be interested to hear his story. Welcome along to the podcast, Mark.
Thanks, Tim.
Okay, so where we'd like to start these podcasts, Mark, is basically just telling the listening audience where were you born and where did you sort of grow up, background, and how you sort of born and raised, that sort of thing.
Okay, well, I think, it sounds like much like yourself, I was I'm an Australian, so I was born in Sydney in the 70s.
What part of Sydney did you grow up in then?
On the North Shore, so yep. Over on, people know Mossman, over on the North Shore there, mm-hmm. So ended up going to school over in the east, so sort of had a foot in both camps, but grew up there and ended up going to Sydney Uni for 3 or 4 years.
And what did you study at Sydney Uni?
Arts, and had an economics major, so 3 years of that, and then got into the workforce, so it was about 1991.
So I might backtrack a little bit. So growing up, what sort of things did you get into? What sports did you play? Where'd you sort of kick around, that sort of thing, hobbies?
Yeah, so growing up on the Northern Beaches there, I was into my water sports, so the surfing and sailing were sort of, in the background throughout my childhood, and, as I went through school, I was playing rugby and signed up in the first 15, and I was rowing as well, and I was quite into my athletics as well, so, I guess those three sports, but always the water sports in the background carried on, and I ended up sailing professionally for 5 years, so that's where it sort of headed.
Yep. So what was school life like? Did you enjoy school? Did you have a lot of friends, or, were you the prefect? What was
No, I've always been disappointed. I'm still annoyed about it that I was ever made a prefect, actually. But it's quite an academic school, so Sydney Grammar. So, probably not ideally suited to it, but got through it. It was quite a tough environment academically, and I was probably more on the sporting side of the school, which... it was tough in itself, but got through it and got myself into uni. So, it was a good school. I wouldn't send my kids to it, but I've taken the learnings from it.
Yep. Okay. So going back to your early teenage years, can you sort of remember what your first job that you may have had?
First job. Wow. Well, I was always doing what I was told at home, more or less, I guess. But first paid job was. In a pub, actually, over in the eastern suburbs, so the Lord Dudley. I started there when I was about 18, when I legally could work there. So I was a glass boy. So I started off cleaning ashtrays and picking up glasses and, doing all those dirty jobs that you do in a pub, and then worked my way up from there, through my uni days. So.
So parents, what do they sort of get up to? What was their background sort of more?
So my dad's a Kiwi, actually. So he was at Wanganui School up on the North Island, and ended up going to Cambridge University and studied law there, and then he started his career in Sydney, not in law, but in banking. So he was a private banker through the 70s and 80s in Australia. So, had a pretty successful business career in private banking. Mm-hmm. And my mother originally was a school teacher, and then, took her over, running the family and four kids and, doing all those things, which she was fantastic at. So, we had a pretty stable upbringing and family life and all this. I was the oldest of four, so consider yourself the boss, don't you? As four of four, but as the oldest, but it was a good great environment to grow up in.
So did the university, and what do you think of university? Did you sort of did you like the life, I guess, life when you're at university and studying and doing a bit of work to obviously get you, how did it all sort of come together?
I think I enjoyed it, but by year two or three, I was definitely ready to get out of it and get into the workforce. I think in hindsight, I wish I'd gone away to university. It's something, my wife and I hope for our kids is that they experience university outside of the area they grew up in. Sydney University is a great uni, but I was driving there from home, and I could see the guys in the colleges having a great time and sort of participate in that a little bit. But I think, I was ready to move on by the time I got to the third year of it.
Mm. So anything that, I guess, that anything else that you sort of studied apart from arts and economics, did you get it? Did you sort of think about law? Did you think about more commerce type stuff as well, business?
Yeah, I was quite interested. There was a course that we were doing which was based on governmental studies, and I quite enjoyed that, just the sort of geopolitical scene around the world and learning a bit about that. So I quite enjoyed that. And then I started to head towards the TV and advertising industry. And so as part of that, I did the Advertising Federation of Australia advertising diploma, which was interesting to me.
Yep.
It was actually in the same, it was in my third year of uni, so I think it sort of overlapped a little bit. Yeah, so I quite enjoyed that.
So in the TV advertising. So I guess once you finished uni, what was the first job then after that? That was a full-time job, I guess.
Yeah, so I went directly into a job at Channel 10, as in the TV network, selling media. So I was a junior in there. It was Channel 10 regional areas of Australia, so not the metro, not the city, so selling Channel 10 regionally. And I did that for a year or two, and then I think I was quite a tough employee.
Why would you say that?
I think I wanted more, and I was pushing for more, and they offered it to me. They said, go and set up your own regional direct department for us.
Okay.
Where I was dealing directly with clients that didn't have advertising agencies, so Harvey Norman, some of the record companies, Sony and Mushroom, those sorts of people. So where you're going and creating TV campaigns for them, and they're buying off the television station directly as opposed to using an agency.
Yeah,
so I did that, and that developed quite well.
So, I mean, obviously we can see you're sort of leading here, sales skills. Where did you sort of develop those? Were they something that were always with you? I mean, obviously you must be pretty good with that part, doing, you know, obviously selling TV, advertising, media, and then obviously where you're going to go after that. So when did you first think that was your, one of your, I guess, most profound skills? Correct me if I'm wrong, though.
Yeah, I think it was, it's quite a rigid, structured environment. So one thing it taught me, off the back of school and uni was that, you turn up at 9 o'clock and you do what you're told to do. And there was quite a lot of pressure, and there still is in that environment, in that industry, where you've got three main TV stations all competing heavily for advertising dollar.
Yep.
So it was quite full on in terms of hitting targets and making sure everything was done correctly. And, so I learned quite a lot from that, but I always had an interest in the production and creative side of it, of the TV industry as well. And so I was, the new role was good because I could do both.
Yeah.
I could sell the airtime, and then I could write ads, and we could make them and put them on and see what happened. So, I was lucky to experience that.
Okay. So what have I got here? So where does this sort of transition? Did you sort of, before you made the move to Queenstown, what else did you sort of get up to? Did you actually get into the real estate agency much before the move, or how did that sort of
No, work? So this the media side was in the early 90s, and then what happened was Sony Music approached to get more airtime on the network, and I ended up with another guy writing a rock and roll music program called Ground Zero.
Okay.
And then we sold it to the network, and it ran for 5 years live on Channel 10 on Friday nights, beaming out around the country. We had bands coming on, and we'd interview rock stars coming out from LA who were attached to Sony, and it was amazing. I was in this music industry all of a sudden, and interviewing Kylie Minogue. And
so you actually got to interview people like Kylie Minogue.
I drove Kylie Minogue to her album launch on Oxford Street in an open top Mustang. being filmed as we drove through the streets. I interviewed Courtney Love, Marilyn Manson, all those sorts of feelers from New Zealand who were great, came on.
Yep.
And then after 5 years, we'd had enough of it, and the network had enough of us, and we disbanded.
Yeah. What do you think sort of led to that end? Is it just something had run its course, or...?
I think, yeah, in that industry, it's very hard to keep it fresh, keep on top of it. Even though it was only once a week, it was, we weren't earning a lot out of it, and it kind of ran its course.
Sort of limited,
Limited scope, and it was tiring because we were it was on from 10 o'clock at night through to midnight, so we were running around still 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, and, it was quite tough, but lots of fun, and learned heaps from it.
Yeah. So then, what, when that finished, what was sort of next, I guess, for you then?
Well, I was also sailing in the background, so I'd got involved with the 18-foot skiff series in Sydney. That's the, you know, the professional circuit there. I decided I liked the look of that, so I managed to get involved and campaigned on a boat for 3 or 4 years. And then what happened was, leading into the Olympics, it dried up because a lot of the sponsorship decided to go that way, and the producer of it pulled the pin. Mm-hmm. And so the boys got together and said, well, you're the only one who knows anything about TV, so you need to take over the running of it. So I did for 2 years, and I sold it into, and we kept it going on Channel 9, actually, for 2 years. So I ran that through the late 90s and got all the sponsorship and ran the series, and it was great fun. And I did enjoy that, but it was, once the Olympics came around, it was very tough, and I had an opportunity to get into real estate, so that's where that changed.
So tell us about your first sort of, when you first got into real estate, what sort of made you decide to get into it? And I'm guessing this is around the turn of the century.
Yep.
Tell us about that story, I guess.
I think I'd bought one apartment in Macleay Street in Sydney, and in selling it made more money in one transaction than I had in like 5 years of doing television. I thought, this is a move for me at this point, and I'd learned a lot from TV, and I was offered this opportunity to join an Australian brand that was planning to open in New Zealand. Got offered the opportunity to launch the brand in New Zealand, and thought, I'll do that.
Yeah, so I guess I was going to ask there. So that's sort of your first job there, and I guess living in Sydney, because you're living in Sydney, you would have seen what was happening. That was sort of leading the real estate price market at the high end for quite a long time, you know, 20 odd plus years ago in the late 90s, leading into the Olympics. And is that sort of part of what you saw in how something like a market like that sort of developed? You said, gee, that's quite interesting. And what did you sort of learn from that? I guess, did that teach you anything?
Yeah, I mean, I could see the size of the transactions happening and the amount of money that these agents were making.
Yep.
And I guess I saw and thought, well, the combined skills of what I'd learned over the last, 10 years of media and marketing and TV, et cetera, would combine quite well into the real estate industry, because it's largely a communications business and a marketing business as much as it is a sales business. So I thought, I could have a crack at this. And at the time, a few other things had happened in Sydney, including my house burning down.
Oh, what, really?
Yeah, which led me to think.
So whereabouts was your house located?
Oh, I was over in Mossman. I was only renting at the time, and I was actually away when it happened, but it burnt down, and then I managed to fall off a roof and break both my feet. Broke up with my girlfriend. I thought, there's three things. Here's an opportunity to go to New Zealand. Queenstown, it's not a bad part of the world. I've been here previously, so.
Yeah, so when did you first sort of come to Queenstown? What year was that?
It was late 2002. Yeah.
Okay, so just before you decided, gee, I like this place, this is where I want to, start this off.
Well, we'd filmed the music program over here in the late 90s, and I thought, so I knew it a little bit, and I had a mate here.
Yep.
And so there's a few different factors to it, but I thought it was a pretty good part of the world to go and. And I think I'd been here and thought, geez, it's unbelievably beautiful.
Yeah.
And, it would suit the, real estate brand that we were launching.
Yeah.
And so I gave it a go.
So when you first launched the brand, and we're talking Sotheby's, aren't we? Is that what we're talking? Yeah. So how did that all sort of start out? I mean, what were you sort of doing on a day-to-day basis when this all sort of started? Were you selling real estate as well as trying to expand the business, or were you doing a combination of both?
Yeah, well, I guess just backtracking, we had the Australian brand here for a year or so, and as an employee, but then thought, with my business partner at the time, we can do our own thing.
Yeah.
And so we sort of head out on our own, and when we did that, we had a lot of developers and property owners come to us saying, hey, we'd love you boys to list our property, our project. Jack's Point was an example of it.
Yeah.
But you can't be just Mark and Julian. We need to get a brand that's going to enhance the project. And we thought about what was best. Took quite a bit of time doing that. And then reached out to Sotheby's in the US and didn't think we'd have much of a hope of getting it. But one way or another, we ended up, you know, with it, which was fantastic and, as I say, a bit of a surprise to us. But yeah, early days was very much just selling to eat and pay for rent and doing whatever we had to do to keep open. And
So I guess since you moved to Queenstown, you've been here the whole time, you haven't sort of moved away during the last 20 years. I guess you would have seen so much happen in 20 years here. I mean, that's the thing. If you've been here that long, Jack's Point wasn't really, did that really exist in 20 years ago? What was Jack's Point then?
Well, when it launched, it was just a paddock.
Yeah.
Pretty nice big paddock that, you know, happened to have a wonderful lake frontage to it. And it was always stunningly beautiful, but it did take a while to get moving. You know, it took a while for locals to accept that, you know, you'd want to live all the way over there. And it was, you know, probably slightly overpriced at the time for what it was. But in time it took off. So, you know, it's developed hugely over the 20 years and, you know, it's obviously become a lot more cosmopolitan and expanded, you know, in terms of its scale and shape and price as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's changed dramatically.
And obviously Arthur's Point, it's sort of, it's been around for a while, but obviously you've seen that develop as well, another sort of pocket suburb that a lot of people like.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. I mean, I think growth is positive as long as it's done in the right way, and you know, we've got the infrastructure to deal with it. You know, it's good for the town.
Yeah. So over the last 20 years, has there been many times where it's been difficult to sell real estate in this area? Has there been any lulls? Has there been, I guess, some market corrections along the way?
Yeah, there has. Like any market, it goes up and down, but it's amazingly resilient. If you look back over the last 20 years, GFC was probably a time like it was everywhere else where it backed off, and then it, you know, we got through that. We had to downsize the business quite a bit at that time, but we got through it, and you know, then it peaked again in 2016.
Mm.
You know, that was a really poignant year, and then it sort of dipped off and plateaued, but it never really drops off dramatically. You know, as I say, it's sort of, it'll peak and then plateau and then it'll go again. So you know, even over the last year and a half, it's you know, it's been one of the more, probably the most resilient markets in New Zealand,
yes,
in terms of its recovery. So yeah, we like it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and obviously, you know, government policy always does have enough, can stymie, I guess, to a degree, some things that happen. But I've known some, you know, people in the real estate industry, and obviously it's not just, you know, when you're looking at what drives prices of real estate, it's not just one or two things. It's, you've got to look at like 20 different variables or more, don't you?
Yeah, well, you look at this market and it's pretty unique in terms of New Zealand because of the purchase of, you know, feeder markets that drive it.
Mm.
You know, so you've got that east coast of Australia, you've got Auckland, and it also is driven more and more each year, you know, internally.
Mm.
So people moving from Kelvin Heights to Quail Rise and what have you.
Yeah.
Back in the day, back in the early 20s, it was very much people looking at it as a holiday home destination from Auckland or Christchurch or the occasional Aussie, but more and more it's also becoming somewhere where they want to live.
Yes.
More and more people moving to it to live, you know, so it's changing that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is, it's remarkably buoyant little market, this one.
Yeah, so obviously lots of things that you mentioned there that sort of can affect your supply and demand, I guess, in Queenstown. So I guess you're looking at Queenstown generally, what do you see on the horizon? Is real estate one of those things that's hard to predict, or you've been able to predict it quite well when you sort of look back and said, I think this is going to happen? How have you gone with being able to predict where the market's gone, goes in the future, and what do you see, I guess, in Queenstown's future?
Yeah, so we quite often follow, or New Zealanders in general, follow the east coast of Australia. So if you look at what's happening in Sydney recently, you know, it's well and truly, well, it seems to be returning to a pretty consistent market. We generally will follow on from them. So 3 to 6 months after, we usually follow in the same sort of pattern. This year, obviously, we've got the election, so there's a few curveballs there just to see what happens with that, and there's a change in government. And then I think tomorrow, being the 24th, is the next OCR call. So that'll, you know, we're very linked to interest rates, this industry. So we'll see what happens there. Obviously, back of the budget last week, whether they increase that like 0.25 or 5, we'll wait and see. But we do reflect those
interest rates. Do you think it needs to keep going up? For some people, it's quite high at the moment, isn't it?
What's that term?
Interest rates are quite high.
Yeah. I mean, historically, if you look back 20 years, 30 years, it's not too bad. But compared to 2 years ago, and it was 2%, you know, we're into the, you know, eights for a floating rate. And
yeah, it's quite high.
Six.
It hasn't been that high for some time.
No. In our end of the market, in that mid to high end, at the super high end particularly, they're not so affected by interest rates, so kind of again protected a little bit there. But in the low to mid end, you know, you've got to keep an eye on these things. It does have an effect. But I think long term, we're not going to go backwards in the Southern Lakes. New Zealand in general is very popular overseas.
Yep.
If we get a change in government, we'll see whether they relax the overseas buyer rules. Because that was changed, the Labor Party, so that it's only Australians and Singaporeans. But I think long-term view of Southern Lakes is it's just becoming more and more popular, and I can't see that slowing down at the moment.
For sure. The factors that contribute to Queenstown's appeal, I mean, obviously that does have a bit of an effect on desirability of a location and the prices. But the things, from a real estate agent point of view, what are those things that really set Queenstown apart?
Well, probably similar to what I saw when I first came here. It's like, my gosh, for a Sydney boy, it looks like a slice of Europe.
Yeah.
Not having to be to Europe at that time, but you know, a little bit of Europe on the doorstep for an Australian. You know, the Alps are like nothing you would see in Australia, and obviously the general beauty of the place is outstanding. So I think it's the first thing that captures you, isn't it? And you know, that sort of village community vibe that you get from the place, and the Four Seasons aspect. So you know, this town completely changes in ski season, doesn't it, in terms of its personality, and then you swing back to summer, and you know, it's biking and sailing, hiking, golf, not that I'm good at
golf,
it, all those things, the skiing. So it's pretty appealing. Like, if you think about the Southern Hemisphere, it's probably the only Four Seasons resort in the Southern Hemisphere. So
I guess here's an interesting one. How do you sort of stay updated with the trends and developments in the real estate industry, and using that information to better serve, you know, obviously vendors or buyers, like, who, you know, obviously acting mainly for the seller side of things?
Yeah, so we're lucky with the brand being based in the US, head office is in New York, and so we're in constant contact with those guys over there about what trends are occurring, and we've actually just been there in the last 2 weeks.
To New York,
yeah, we took our top eight performers on a trip there to reward them.
Obviously, New Zealand-wide performers.
Yeah, New Zealand-wide performers and their partners, so it was amazing. Yep. And we dipped into the head office there, the auction house, and also the real estate office there in Madison. And, you know, we just learned a lot from those guys all the time. And then we went to the global conference in Vegas, and and Realogy Corporation, which owns Sotheby's, is the biggest real estate company in the world. So we're the chairman there talking to us about global trends, US trends, and what's happening around the place. So we do learn quite a bit from those guys, and, you know, what they're seeing over there very often ends up happening here. So, you know, we're kind of at the forefront of it. As best we can be.
Yeah, I mean, obviously COVID sort of threw up an interesting curveball to the real estate industry. How did you sort of see, obviously, the whole thing, I guess, and obviously now that we're out of it?
Yeah, well, it was a pretty dramatic time, wasn't it? We're in that lockdown period, we weren't sure whether we were going to have a business. We had three or four different levels of stress if, you know, such and such happened, what we were going to do, and thought, well, we start in a garage, we might end up being back in a garage, but... And then as we came out of lockdown, it went crazy. So 2021 was remarkable. And that move from city to lifestyle, you know, through that pandemic really fed this market down here. And it's still happening. So there's still this trend of lifestyle destination growth and move from the city when people started to realize they could work from home.
Yep.
Through that pandemic, that trend's continued. So, you know, I think it's going to continue to feed this market. Another, you know, like... regional markets of New Zealand, you know, Tauranga, Hawke's Bay, Nelson, that sort of thing, over time.
So with Sotheby's, I mean, how big is Sotheby's when it comes to, how many real estate agents have you got working out of the Queenstown office and New Zealand wide?
So New Zealand wide, we're about 280 people,
yep.
of which 200 are agents.
Of 200 of agents, yep.
Yep, 200 agents. Down in this part of the world, still our you know, our head office environment between here and Britomart, and we've got about 35 between here and Wanaka and Arrowtown.
Yep.
Yep, so it's our number one performing area, along with Hawke's
Bay. Quite a few, reasonable down in this area.
Yeah, we've got 25% of the market here, so we're quite consistently around that level, and you know, we do that without 25% of the agents in the area. So we, on a sort of per agent basis, we'd be number one in the area. And certainly the higher up the value proposition of properties, the more market share we have.
Technology, so with technological advancements, rise of online platforms, all those types of things, there's lots of them that, you know, that are on the web. How do you think the role of the real estate agent is evolving? Is it changing? And how do you adapt?
Yeah, so it's becoming more and more digital, like everything. Okay, so we're having to engage more and more with, you know, digital specialists, whether that's at a social media or the way that we market properties and film them and push them out on social channels, etc. We've done quite a few sales, but actually during the pandemic was when it really kicked off, was selling properties to people who hadn't seen them. And we did a couple of $7 million, $8 million deals to people who were buying purely on the video content that we'd created, or doing live crosses to them in Sydney or wherever they were. So that's happening all the time, and you just got to be on top of it. And things like chat, GBT, using that AI, and we think that's going to be a huge part of the future, as long as we don't end up doing ourselves out of jobs. But hopefully that doesn't
happen. How long ago did you start using or look at ChatGPT?
Over the last 6 months, I was using it for copy and that sort of thing. We're a little weary of not overusing it, but it comes in handy time, every now and then.
Yeah, so what approaches that you sort of employ in Sotheby's helping your clients navigate the process of selling a property, I guess? Are there any particular approaches that Sotheby's do that might be different to what a traditional agent might be?
Yeah, so I mean, we're contracted to the vendor, so our obligation is to work for the vendor to achieve the highest price we can. Mm-hmm. Once we've listed the property and we market it, that's when the buyers come, but our obligation is to the vendor. So we're always trying to achieve as high a price as we can. Quite often, someone's number one asset, so we're very aware of that and work as hard as we can to get as much as we can. So the point of difference that we have is the ability to market it around the world. Via the channels that we've got that Sotheby's provides. And it comes back down to the basic fact that the more buyers you have, the higher price you get. So our point of difference is to expose it to a wider audience.
So talking about a wider audience, what's the most unusual location that a buyer has actually come from that you're aware of with Sotheby's over the last 20 years, or experiences that are memorable to you? Yeah,
we've had quite a few interesting characters over the years. We've had people trying to buy properties with diamonds and crypto and all sorts. So, back in the days pre this government, when internationals could buy here, we've had Russians. I had one guy who was adamant that he wanted to buy and I had him in town for several weeks trying to find a place that was on a hill where he could see everyone around him and so that he was protected and from the enemy. Whoever the enemy was, but we've had all sorts. So it's a interesting job in that way. You get to meet some fascinating people, and we've had sheiks and tech billionaires.
And
all sorts.
Lots of any sort of celebrities or famous people, politicians or anything like
Yeah, we've had a few celebrities. Quite often we end up sending, signing NDAs, so we're not allowed to talk about it. But we've got a celebrity headed our way in a few weeks' time, which I'd love to tell you who they were, but I can't. And we've got a couple of really wealthy individuals, looking around at the moment that again, I'd love to tell you, but we can't. But there's plenty of interesting characters looking at New Zealand at the moment, that's for sure.
Here's one that you might help. What advice, I guess, would you give to anybody or even people that have worked for you considering a career in the real estate industry, and especially in a competitive market like Queenstown, where, as you said, there's a lot of agents, the numbers are high with agents, you've got a good concentration when it comes to market share. Tell us about what advice you would give to someone who wants to really get into Queenstown market as a real estate agent.
Yeah, so I think you look at some agents, I think, view the job as a lifestyle occupation. And I would suggest that if you're looking at it from that point of view, you might do okay, but you're never going to do as well as the agent that takes it as a full-time career, as a profession.
Yeah.
Because it is a full-time, it can be full-time, 7 days. Mm-hmm. So you get people ringing you on Sunday afternoons when they go and look at stuff, and you've got to be there if you want to do the deal. So
yeah, exactly.
That would be the biggest thing, I think, is if you're going to do it, take it, if you want to make a career out of it, take it 100% seriously and be professional at it, and that way you'll do well.
And what do you think people do wrong? Do they just not take it seriously, or do they, it's not for everybody, not everyone's got the necessary way of it, I guess you could say?
Yeah, it's not for everyone. It took me a little while to get, you got to have a pretty thick skin. So you got to decide that, it is what you're going to do, and you're going to go and do deals and be happy to pick up the phone and do what you need to do to get deals done, because they don't get paid a salary. So they're on commission only. And if they don't do a deal, they can go for a couple of months without getting paid. And that can cause, some interesting times amongst the agents.
Yeah.
But they do get rewarded well when they work hard. So, you've got to have the right mindset towards it and be professional with it and work hard at it. And if you do that, then you get the rewards that are due to you.
So I guess, you've achieved quite a lot in your career. You sort of more hands off these days. Do you get involved in sales itself, or just sort of managing Sotheby's pretty much as a team?
Yeah, so less involved in the deal making. There's still certain projects and big listings that we work on to bring in for the business, but more so growing the business around the country. So we are able to franchise this brand. So, for instance, we're just opening up, or we've got an HOA heads of agreement signed in Christchurch, so we're opening that territory in the next few months.
That new territory for you, Christchurch?
We were there previously, up until the earthquake, and then we sort of left it alone, more or less, and now we're ready to re-enter it under a franchise. So day-to-day, growing the business around the country and managing it, basically,
So your goals are, one of the goals is to continue to expand. Any sort of other goals, I guess, that you've got in your career, looking to, any other areas outside of what you're doing that you want to expand into as well?
Well, we've got plenty ahead of us for the brand in New Zealand. We're 25 offices at the moment. We'd like to grow it up to 40 in the next few years.
Yep.
And double that personnel count. So that's the immediate objective. Other things career-wise, no, not at the moment. I'm pretty full-time doing this. So I think we'll just see where that takes us over the next few years. I'm 52, so I'm keen to grow this as much as we can while we've still got the energy to do it, and then see where it leads us. But there might be some other tentacles that we could add on to the business in time that that we might look at. We've got a luxury rentals business that is growing quite well and doing well. We would look to grow that around the country and maybe some other bits and pieces, but we're pretty busy.
Yeah, do you still get, so with Queenstown, what sort of, hobbies do you currently get up to when you do get time to get away from, the office, or get away from your job?
Well, I still love my water sports, so it's one thing that I miss from living, a mountainous area is the ocean. So in October, I'm taking the family on a surfing trip to Fiji.
Okay.
I love my surfing, so that, or sailing, is my sort of go-to.
Mm.
My wife is heavily into the ski industry. She was an Olympian ski racer, and so that side of the family, with my wife and the kids, heavily involved in the skiing. So I do my best just to sort of keep up on that front. And we're into our outdoor pursuits in terms of our running and hiking and biking and all those sorts of things. And I'm still to beat my wife in any form of running race, which is frustrating, but because we sponsored the marathon, which happens every year.
So I guess, what are your favourite areas in Queenstown when it comes to real estate? Is there sort of, you see some pockets that grow? We spoke about Jack's Point, how that's sort of developed. obviously there's all these different pockets, maybe seven or eight different pockets, maybe more, I'm not sure. Where, if you know, where's a good, if you were to, if someone said to you, and I'm sure they have, where would you live in this sort of area? Where are the better places to live in your opinion?
Kind of depends on what you're after. If you're after a lake view, then you know you probably want to be, you know, like for instance in town,
yep,
on the hill looking back over it.
Yes.
Or if you like the idea of being close to restaurants and that sort of thing, you do that. But you know, other people like the rural area. So we're actually living in Dalefield, in the rural area there.
Yep, sort of in between
Just
Point and onwards.
Yep. Yeah, just as we were living in town before kids, and enjoying that lifestyle. But as soon as we started to have kids, we thought we need
a bit more space.
Room, let them run around. So we enjoy that in between Arrowtown and Queenstown and Sunny and all those things. But so everyone's a little bit different. People who like golf love Jack's Point, or they like, you know, Arrowtown because they can get to the courses around there. Dalefield.
Not very far from three really good golf courses.
No, and then you've got the Kelvin Heights crew who love their sun and they like the waterfront over there and that sort of thing. And, you know, all those that like wineries, you know, like Gibson Valley, let's say, and those that like community and that local kind of vibe of Arrowtown, you know, love that area and the school there. So I think it's horses for courses, but yeah, we're pretty lucky to have the choice.
Definitely is. I guess, and Sotheby's, I mean, you've probably spoken a bit about what sort of sets the agency apart, but what have you sort of, I mean, if someone wants to sort of remember your legacy that you've left behind with Sotheby's and what you've created here, what do you want them to remember?
I think, you know, that we developed an alternative brand for people to use to gain a premium for their property. You know? So a successful business, but also a business which is highly regarded in terms of the clientele that we've had throughout the tenure of it.
Yep.
And you know, we get pretty good feedback from our clients, and I guess just a feeling that we've achieved a good business, but we also achieve fantastic results for our clients. And you know, one of the things with the business where you enjoy it is the feedback you get from clients when you solve an issue for them or you get a premium price for them. It's quite addictive in terms of that.
Yeah.
You know, when you know, it's a service business, so when you get that recognition of having done a good job, and I guess that applies to the business as a whole.
Yeah, so I guess anything else that you want to sort of talk about with your career or anything else that you wanted to talk about what you're sort of working with at the moment, Sotheby's, I guess, you know, other things that sort of with Queenstown that you may get involved in, like do you get involved with the Chamber of Commerce? I don't know if I've seen you involved in the Chamber of Commerce or what other sort of things around town do you get involved in?
Yeah, I suppose as the business grows and, you know, we get the right people in place and we've got some pretty good senior management leaders here at the moment, you know, allows potentially more time, I can get more involved in that sort of thing. I'm not involved with the Chamber of Commerce at the moment, but you know, it's something that interests me.
Yeah.
We'll see where that heads, but for the time being, as I say, we're pretty hands-on and full-on in terms of growing the business around New Zealand and maximising opportunity of it.
Yeah, excellent. I'm just trying to think if there's any other thing else that I missed or wanted to ask you, but and that's been really, really good. Have you sort of done a podcast before? Have you sort of had a story written about you by the newspaper or anything like that, or magazines?
Done a few bits and pieces over the years, but I'm not sure about a podcast. We did do an article a year or so ago, and I did my first live radio interview on Saturday. That was interesting. We had some pretty
What radio station?
Newstalk last Saturday. Yeah, and I wasn't expecting for them to have callers ring in, so there were some left field characters there that which was fun. So not too much of this sort of thing, but happy to do it when the opportunity arrives, and hopefully it's useful. And
no, it's definitely, I mean, I think someone like yourself who has you know, a really good sort of background and been here for such a long time and seen quite a bit, it's just good to get a bit of a good insight as to how you see the real estate industry in particular, because it's, you know, what butters the bread for you is that industry and how you sort of have, you know, built this team of Sotheby's, you know, 25 offices from whatever it started at, probably, you know, nothing 20 years ago. So it's a great achievement to sort of talk to somebody who's gone through all that, and you must have had a lot of long nights and a lot of working Sundays and all that sort of stuff to get to where you've got to. It's really good to have someone with your background, I guess, telling the story. I guess looking at other parts of the world, the Sotheby's network, you said, is quite expanding. There's New York. Do you sort of get much intel from other areas of the world, like Europe and other continents as well, Asia?
Yeah, it's a big business. So last year it did $300 billion in sales. So it's a big business of 25,000 agents around the world. So seeing and hearing all sorts of market trends in terms of what's going on. So as I say, we've recently been in the US, and it's obviously quite often a market leader in terms of what's happening in the real estate world. Mm. So we look there, and then we know the owners over the 20 years of having operated the brand here in New Zealand. We've got to know the owners of various other markets. So we're in contact with the guys in India and Singapore and Tokyo. The Japanese business is quite strong. So we recently in the US at the conference, we had an APAC meeting, so we're probably as close to those guys, our Australian friends. So we're constantly sharing ideas and what's working in terms of our business here and what's working there to see what's going on. But largely we're governed by the rules and policies that go on in New Zealand, and it is interesting to see when you talk to these other these other countries how their international buyer policies work, because largely it's an open book, whereas here we're very much closed door environment at the moment. So one thing I'm interested in is seeing how that evolves over the next couple of years, because I think we're missing out on a lot of not just investment but intellectual property being brought into the country by these people that we're turning away, who quite often end up going to Australia because it's a more open environment for that sort of individual. So it'd be interesting to see where that heads.
As you said, it's an election year. I guess what is your sort of feeling been to any sort of the changes that have been more in recent years? One that sort of comes to mind for me, which probably affects a lot of people in New Zealand, is investment properties not being able to claim interest deductions against their rent income. It seems like one of those policies that does have an effect on lots of things going on. But tell me what you think about these sort of policies and what you've sort of seen, and is there sort of strategies to that you've seen that sort of work in today's environment to counteract this?
Yeah, one of the issues we've got here at the moment is the lack of homes, basically.
Yeah, so I haven't really spoken about
accommodation.
The supply issues really, that sort of is a big one.
Yeah, it doesn't help when you're wanting to employ people, and we've gone through it ourselves, and they can't live here. They're living in Cromwell or Alex or somewhere else, having to drive in because there isn't enough accommodation in Queenstown, and things like that. Negative gearing rule change and the tightening of the tenancy rules haven't helped that scene, because ultimately it makes investors weary.
Yes,
and landlords put their rent up, so it makes it less affordable.
Yeah,
and less supply. We've got a supply issue, so that is not helping it. And things like the Airbnb.
Yeah,
rampant through the town, needs to be considered. I know it is being, but we need to look at other parts of the world. Whistler and Canada, that for example, other areas that have gone through this sort of expansion and seen these sorts of issues and how they've handled it and what they've done to fix it and apply some of it, because we need to fix it. We don't want town emptying out of young people and workers, because it'll destroy it. And
exactly.
So. Yeah,
so it's a tough one, and it's not hopefully on the horizon something happens and we get to going in a better direction there, I think, but it's not looking good, is it for some of these people, is it?
No, well, it's just too much red tape in general, isn't there? To supply. So we've got projects on the go here in town at the moment that are just taking years to get consented. We need the density. So we need that. We need that red tape to be reduced, and for business-minded decisions being made to help solve the problem, because at the moment,
have you sort of had much involvement with sort of any sort of projects that are lobbying government to basically make a particular change at all?
Not directly, no. I mean, we try not to be too, you know, political.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, we see the struggles that go on and the time that these things take to get, you know, brought to fruition, and it just shouldn't be that hard, I don't think, you know, not given the issues that we've got in a growing environment. I mean, one thing, for example, like the Airbnb thing, I think should be controlled via zoning. So, you know, at the moment it's anyone in a residential zone can have an Airbnb, you know, renter going through their property, and probably should be reconsidered to be control via the visitor accommodation zoning as a starting point. So these sorts of things, but yeah, can we not try to be too political on it?
Yeah, and I think it's been good. I think we've gone to 45 minutes. That's probably a good amount of time, I think, for someone to listen to this podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast today, Mark. I learned quite a little bit there, which is good. I hope you've found the questions thought provoking and interesting, and you obviously come up with an answer for everything, so it's good. Any final words?
No, just a pleasure. Well, thank you for having me on the show, and you know, it's been great to meet you, and I hope I haven't put too many people to sleep.
I think it's interesting. Please, when I do send it to you, the link, share it around to your audience. That's the best way to get people to listen to it and listen to the podcast in general. I mean, the average podcast gets about 35 to 40 listens in Queenstown, which is not so bad, I don't think. So hopefully you get to, you know, get a few people listening to it, share it around, and I think people will learn some stuff as well. But it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much, Mark.
Cheers, Tim. Thanks for having me.